Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this afternoon are my co-hosts, T-Bob Hebert and Baby Alice, making her radio debut. Well, we have been gracious enough to be able to be accompanied by our good friend Jim Vavida from IGN. How are you doing, Jim?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, especially at such a busy time as we come off of Oscar season and prepare for convention season. So a lot going on. But first and foremost, I know you got a chance to see Shazam, and I know you've had an opportunity to see Captain Marvel. Which one is the better film?
I can't say anything about Shazam for another several hours.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel is a good, in my estimation, a good solid upper middle of the pack MCU movie. I liked it, but I did have reservations with it, but I thought it was fun overall and I enjoyed it. I've seen it twice, more because I, just because of all the spoiler coverage we do when these movies come out, I wanted to make sure I had all my stuff straight. But the Shazam movie, I should be able to talk about publicly tonight. When does this air?
This is going to be delayed till like Saturday. So you're good.
Oh, okay, it's good. I really liked it. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Very sweet. Very heartfelt.
That's good to hear, especially considering that the clamoring there was for a second trailer and the concern when you weren't seeing one and all of that kind of stuff. You know how the internet likes to set itself on fire.
Yeah, for sure. No, I thought it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. It's really sweet. Some cool surprises in there. And yeah, I really can't wait for people to actually finally get a chance to see it.
One of those movies that you're ready for people to start having a conversation about, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a Shazam movie has been in the works for like almost as long as I've worked at IGN. To finally have it and to have it turn out as well as it did and to be the Shazam movie that I was hoping it would be was, it's not often that, that the story gets, that there's a happy ending to the a movie with such a long kind of development hell period.
Yeah. And there are a number of those throughout comic book movie history, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about the Oscars. Bottom line, did the Academy get it right?
For Best Picture?
Yes.
No, I Green Book was not my pick. I mean, I understand why it won in a way, but I just think it's a that was a pretty middling kind of it just didn't really have any depth to it. Like I liked moments of it, and I liked the two main actors. But I didn't think that it was a movie that was particularly substantive enough to really warrant winning Best Picture. Like if that movie had come out in March of last year, would people really have been talking about it in time for the Oscars? I don't think so. But there were a lot of movies I quite enjoyed last year: Black Panther and Black Klansman and The Favorite, which were all nominated. I thought it was a missed opportunity, but I get why it won or I guess in a way how it won, but I still don't think it's a great pick. And it's certainly not something like film students are going to be watching 10, 20 years from now.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts on the Academy? It's been a pretty rough year for those guys. The ceremony with no host went over well. But outside of that, it's been a fairly rough 12 to 18 months for the Academy. What are your thoughts on some of the issues they've been having?
Well, I mean, they're mostly self-inflicted wounds. I mean, don't put out a press release announcing best popular film or something like that if you don't have your act together on it, or even like the whole thing with cutting the four categories during the broadcast. I mean, how did you think editors and cinematographers were going to react? I mean, you literally don't have a movie without cinematography and editing. So it was just a pretty dumb. These have just been really dumb mistakes. Like, for all the smart things that they've done in terms of diversity and inclusion and freshening up the ranks, they've also been incredibly kind of just not very thoughtful about how they approached some of these other problems. These were all, to my mind, just self-inflicted wounds. So I'm glad that they ended up reversing course. And I think the Oscar host thing, I mean, I love that the show was shorter and moved along. I mean, I didn't miss having a host. I think having Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph right at the beginning was all you kind of needed, you know, just to get it off on a funny start. And then the mechanics of the show were in place to just keep things moving along.
What was your biggest surprise from the evening?
Probably Olivia Colman. Outside of Best Picture, I really thought Roma was going to win. But I guess just because everyone was talking about Olivia Colman a few months ago, and then it seemed like the conversation really did become, oh, it's Glenn Close, it's her time, blah, blah, blah. And I think ultimately, you know, people loved The Favorite and they did want it to get a major award. You got what, like 10 nominations or something, or maybe more, I forget. But like it was going to get something. And I think Olivia was, I mean, the movie works as great as Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone are in the movie. I mean, Queen Anne is sort of that, the crux of that film. All the characters are vying for her and for her attention and her favor and everything like that. So if Queen Anne didn't work, you didn't have a movie. And Olivia Colman was fantastic. And I think she, you know, very charming. Obviously, we saw with her speech. So I can imagine in the Oscar kind of courting circuit, you know, she just won them over. I'm still kind of surprised Glenn Close didn't win, but like I think at this point she's like the Susan Lucci of Oscar of Best Actress nominees, you know.
I love the fact that Colman apologized to Close at the beginning of her speech.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be really awkward, right? But for the same token, like you did legit win. I mean, people loved your performance, and I think frankly a lot of people, maybe not enough people, saw The Wife. Or that there was some sort of, I don't know. Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, people have to see the movie, and maybe it being your time just isn't enough anymore to get an Oscar.
See, my thought on that was that it was that particular award was to me a reflection of an Academy divided against itself. That the generational transition that is ongoing through the diversity initiatives is not yet complete. And so you still have certain segments of the Academy that are still stuck in the old ways. And so that's why you get Green Book as a Best Picture winner, and you get Rudy Malek in his fake teeth winning Best Actor. But you get Olivia Colman, and you get Black Panther winning a bunch of awards. And so that was kind of my thought, was that it was a reflection of the Academy being divided amongst itself.
Yeah, possibly. I think, you know, there's also the fact that the two key actor winners were, you know, playing. I think, and I want to be kind of, you know, as sort of articulate and careful as I can be stating something like this, but like, I think as sort of identity politics have always been part of kind of Oscar consideration and stuff like that. And I think that maybe there was a bit of an embrace for those two particular characters to be kind of reflective or at least embracing the gay community or the LGBTQ community in terms of, you know, Queen Anne's kind of portrayal in the movie and obviously, you know, Freddie Mercury. I mean, I think it's like everybody wants to make sure that, especially as the Academy becomes more diverse and more thoughtful in how they do things, that, you know, people are being I guess, rewarded or you know, cited. So I wonder if there wasn't a little bit of that there, but I don't know. I mean, I still think she was just fantastic in the movie, and I think, you know, I was very happy that she won, and I do think that it's the fact that she is a veteran actress that other actors love, but, like, the main public doesn't really know her. Is, you know, there's always that kind of element too, to, like, some of these winners that are, like, kind of come out of nowhere. But, you know, I think with The Crown coming up, she is going to be even more, you know, she's playing Queen Elizabeth II in season 3. Like, she's going to be even more kind of out there now. So, you know, that's in a weird way another invisible Oscar win, I guess, for Netflix at the Academy this year. They didn't win Best Picture, but, like, they're certainly going to hype up the fact that they have, you know, the Best Actress winner of 2019 starring in their new show.
Right. And your thoughts on Spielberg's initiative that he's proposed for the Academy in regards to Netflix?
Well, a colleague of mine named Brian Collins, who's like a horror movie writer and is a very funny guy, dug up this old article and was tweeting about how Spielberg came out against DVDs back in the day. You know, and that didn't really age well, did it? I think he's being very territorial, and it's not very... It seems incredibly short-sighted for a guy who's had such a big mark in the industry. And I get that he doesn't want it to just become the Emmys 2.0, but the reality is that people, times are changing and people are watching things differently. And frankly, it's a little hypocritical because the Academy for years has been sending out DVD screeners to their members. So most of the members voting for Best Picture are watching things at home. They're not going to the Guild screenings, even though they're being set up. You know, they wanted the convenience of being able to watch it at home. So why is it good enough for Academy members, but not for the movies themselves? It just seems to me misguided and hypocritical. And if you're going to push to exclude Netflix, which is putting movies out there now, I get that they spent $60 million, and that is obscene to spend that much on an Oscar campaign. But if you're going to put any sort of, like, spending caps on things or you're like, you know, make people like a Netflix put their movies in theaters, then maybe you get rid of the DVD screeners for a number of reasons, including piracy, and make your members go to these movies and see them on the big screen if it means that much to you. You know, you have to kind of give and take a little here.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. My reading on that was more of along the lines that he's aligned with the theater owners and that they fear Netflix and they fear the changing of the model, and that he was trying to publicly embarrass and humiliate Netflix after what happened at the Oscars into submitting into doing more in-theater screenings. But as you point out, it's just like, regardless, art is art and film is film, regardless of whether it's on your TV set or on whether it's on your laptop or whether it's in a theater. You know, there are theater count issues too. I mean, like, we didn't get The Wife here until after the Oscars.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these things too. Like, okay, is he going to disqualify a movie that had a small theatrical run, basically died in a theater after a week, but maybe people found it on Netflix 6 months later? You know, does that disqualify that movie? Like, I mean, for years, Green Book came out in DVD and Blu-ray the week before the Oscars.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I think that there, if he really wants to make a campaign, why didn't he campaign against the MPAA allowing Netflix to become a member? That's, to me, far more of a seismic shift than, like, the Academy giving them an Oscar that nobody's going to remember they won.
Right.
You know, like, you're letting, they're already in the club if the MPAA granted them membership. So it's like, I don't see what he's actually accomplishing then.
Right.
Because all he wants is the Oscar glory. And it's like, dude, you got your Oscars and you know, they'll vote for your movies if they like them.
And this is in the face of one of his best friends getting all the money in the world to do The Irishman.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but as much as I can't wait to see a 3-hour Martin Scorsese gangster movie again, the reality is that thing probably is going to not perform that well commercially in a theater. And Netflix, just like it did for like Mowgli, Circus's movie a few months ago. Like, it's going to prevent embarrassment. Like, you know, Martin Scorsese's last, I think Silence was his last movie, right? And that
yes.
thing tanked. It was a huge bomb. And I liked the movie, but like, you can't, some Netflix is actually not a dirty word. It's a good thing for some filmmakers. It's giving them creative freedom and a ton of money to go and make these things. I think you can make a very valid argument that Netflix has too much stuff and it does a disservice, I think, to the smaller and middle size things, because you're just going to get lost in your queue. You have too much stuff to promote.
Yeah.
But like, for the big things that they are putting muscle behind, you know, a lot of people are going to watch that The Irishman now because of Netflix, that might, you know, have missed it at the movies or just opted to wait until it hit video, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Netflix is doing for actual filmmakers what YouTube did for student filmmakers, and that is giving them a way to actually get their projects that no one else would finance or no one else would ever see an opportunity to be seen.
Is Spielberg going to actually court again, say, let's say Disney Plus starts doing original movies out there just for their thing? Maybe they, for 1 week, for the hell of it, put it in theaters. Is Spielberg going to rally against that? What's he going to do when Fox Searchlight ends up being just a streaming service for their new Disney owners? Like, is he really, would he really campaign against like another Shape of Water type thing where it's, you know, the little movie that could? I mean, I just think that it's, you know, he is in a rarefied position and he's a fantastic filmmaker. My whole generation is in love with movies to a great deal because of him. But like, I wish that he would understand that things do evolve. I mean, like, you know, the film industry is constantly, it's almost akin to like xenophobia, being worried of this like outsider that's going to come in and take your stuff from you. And it's like, TV didn't do it, DVD didn't do it, Blu-ray didn't do it, streaming didn't do it, the internet didn't do it. Like, you know, people are going to see Captain Marvel this weekend in theaters, and Netflix isn't hurting that. They'll go to the movies to see something that's worth their money and the experience of seeing a big screen. If it's a talking head movie, there are just certain genres and types of movies now that audiences would rather watch at home. And you got to be realistic about the tastes of the film goers and what they want to spend time in a theater watching.
Which is funny, yeah. Because I saw one of those the other night. It was called Greta. it was totally a Lifetime TV movie that should have been on Netflix somewhere.
I mean, you think about like a movie like Lady Bird, right? Mm-hmm. Like that could have easily have been
very
a streaming movie, mm-hmm. you know? And it's I do wonder like how much longer films like that will actually, and I would, you know, don't get me wrong, I would love for these movies to be in theaters. I wish that it wasn't just all popcorn stuff all the time.
I wish studios would make mid-budget stuff again.
Yeah, but the reality is that it's super expensive to go to the movies for a lot of people, like to just for you and your kids, and or just you know, it, like a couple or anybody, just to go to the movies on your own. Like it's a chunk of change, and people have to be more discerning about what they spend on. And if it does look like I can wait 3 months and watch this at home, they're gonna do it.
Yeah,
you know, and that's just the reality. And there's, you know, I don't understand why he's resistant to just, for a guy who's had his finger in the pulse of the audience for so long, to not really grasp that is kind of surprising to me.
I agree. So Jim, we'll get you out of here on this, because we know that you're limited on time. but Star Wars Celebration is coming up. What are some things that you're looking forward to with that, and what are your expectations for whatever the next footage of Endgame that we get are?
Let me do the last part first. I was actually just chatting with my boss Terry Schwartz about about this, and I wonder if we won't actually get another Endgame trailer. Because you think, oh, you'll put it in front of Captain Marvel. I'm beginning to think maybe they'll just do a few TV spots that are essentially the same footage.
Feige has said they're getting another one, so I assumed that they were.
I mean, maybe the Super Bowl spot counted as that. I don't know. It'll be interesting. Or maybe they're going to slap it on a Disney title that they're more...
Dumbo, maybe?
What the hell do they have coming up in the next 3 weeks that isn't Marvel?
Dumbo.
I forget. But in terms of Star Wars Celebration, I mean, I'm going to be at that, and that's going to be huge this year, because not only are we going to get all things Episode 9 finally, but, you know, there's going to be The Mandalorian, they're bringing back Clone Wars. I'm not sure yet what's going on the gaming side, but that's going to be very exciting. I just want to know what the hell Episode 9 is called and just get through that. Like, it's very much like the machinery of the rollout of information and the analysis that we all do, and you're kind of like bracing for it, and you're just like, I kind of just want to know at this point, because it'll be nice to have people talking about something that isn't just still pissing and moaning about Last Jedi.
Or a photo of your three leads hugging in the desert.
Yeah, yeah.
But Jim, we appreciate your time and for joining us, and for always gracing us with your knowledge and expertise. And thank you for being supportive of the podcast.
Of course. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.
You too. Thanks, Jim.